You know, I think I've met a lot of people who are suffering from a previously undiagnosed ailment, a post-election depression syndrome, also known as PEDS. We're going to talk to you today about how to cope with that. David Murata is with us, the president of Murata Wealth Management, also a columnist in the daily newspaper, Sunday Edition, in the commentary section, has great articles and stories there. And you could also check him out online at muratahonmoney.com. And David Murata, welcome back to The Shilling Show. Great to have you with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, I first want to ask you before we jump into this whole coping with the syndrome is what has been the financial reaction to the election? Has it been any different than what we would anticipate based on past history?
Well, I think you can see it in some of the news that's coming out about corporations who are cutting back to part-time workers to try to deal with Obamacare. Most corporations and small businesses are trying to make sure they've got a lot of cash on hand because they know there might be $150,000 more dollars they might need next year that they don't need this year in order to pay their taxes. There's a lot more tax planning has become critically important. A lot of people were, you know, they weren't sure if Romney was actually going to try to lower the rates and and broaden the base and take away some of the deductions. That would be a very different kind of tax planning. Now we're fairly certain that at least in the highest brackets, it's going to go up. I don't know if they'll negotiate something for the lower brackets, but the highest brackets are going to go up. So tax planning becomes absolutely critical, and a lot of people who were holding off until after the elections now know which way the pendulum is liable to swing. We actually thought, I thought within our firm, we should have a new marketing campaign, and it should go something like, you need us now more than ever. And maybe the O of the more should be the Obama symbol, because tax planning has now, you know, moved from first place to zeroth place in terms of its priority, in terms of wealth management. And for those who don't realize it, the tax code is 75,000 pages long. So if you don't think there are opportunities in the tax code, it's because you actually haven't bothered to read it. But if you read all 75,000 pages, you will find something where you can do some tax planning in order to reduce your tax bill. And certainly reducing your taxes is worth a lot more than earning more money at this point, because if you earn more money, they're just going to tax you on it. But if you can reduce your taxes by a dollar, you just get to keep it. And so tax planning has become much, much more critical going forward in terms of wealth management or just trying to build wealth or just trying to scrape together two nickels to pay off your mortgage.
One of the things they're talking about, though, and we've heard a lot of this actually coming from both sides, was closing the quote-unquote loopholes for the millionaires and billionaires. And so is that what we're going to see now, is these various opportunities for people to take advantage of the current tax code being slammed shut?
You might see some attempts to simplify the tax code. I would certainly welcome any attempts they have to simplify the tax code. But I don't think the simplification of the tax code is actually going to simplify it. It's liable to make it more and more complex. I've been taking a wonderful tax class out at PVCC. The instructor out there is great. And I've learned the correct answer to every tax question. It depends. and it depends on 1,000 different issues. And if you can stand on your left leg long enough, you can get the deduction. And if you're willing to do this, that, or the other, then you can get a deduction. And so the more things that they try to target taxes, the more they make them very specific to things you need to do to qualify for them. And I think just because one party won the election doesn't mean all the deer need to stand still and get shot. You know, it means it's all the more important for you to learn to run in a zigzag tax planning effort in order to keep the tax snipers from picking you off. And the problem with that for the middle class is in all the crossfire of trying to aim at the rich, they're going to hit a lot of middle class and lower income people in the aftermath.
It's pretty sad that, and I think your analogy is right on, but it's very sad that we have to look at our government that way. But it's exactly what's happened. It's open season now on millionaires and billionaires. Before we go to the break, we got a couple minutes here. I want to talk about business growth. I know there were stories about people who were just holding onto their money, waiting for the president to be unelected and for somebody new to come in. In this case, it would have been Mitt Romney. And people are going, hey, as soon as that happens, I'm going to expand. I'm going to hire more people. I'm going to maybe start up a new business. And now there's a lot of people saying, what, I'm still going to just hold on to my money and sock it away for another 4 years?
Yeah, and the truth is they're not going to hold away hold on to their money because they're going to have to pay it in higher taxes. And that's really what most of the small businesses I know were waiting for.
Mm-hmm.
They were waiting to see if they could allow, if they were allowed to use this money for expansion. And the answer is no, you are not. You're not allowed to use this money for expansion because we're just going to tax you another $50,000 or $150,000. And the difficulty with that is most people don't realize the way capital gains taxes work. And that is, in order for your business to make a capital venture, like you're a sandwich shop and you want to open another sandwich shop, and let's say that's going to cost $1 million, that $1 million that you're going to go into buying the property and putting things together has to come through after-tax dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't get a deduction. You don't just get to spend that money. It's a capital outlay, and capital outlays have to be expensed over a 28-year period. So when you go to make that venture, you have to have $1 million after tax. And if you're taxed at 50%, that means you need to make $2 million profit. The government gets $1 million, and you have $1 million to put in your small business. And what do you have left to live off of? Nothing. So the problem is they've been stacking up money knowing that they can either start a new venture with this, mm-hmm. or they're going to have to use it to pay taxes. And the truth is they're going to have to use it to pay taxes. And the truth is that the rich don't hurt as much as the poor, because now we're going to have less employment growth and less capital expansion and less growth in our gross domestic product.
In our remaining minute here before we go to the break, there is this school of thought that we're going to solve our problems by sucking money out of the private economy through taxation. That sounds like a plan destined to failure. Have we tried that before, and what were the results?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. A lot of people who are depressed about the election think, you know what, we actually need to have won this debate. We didn't win the debate, and so things will never be good again. And the way I look at it is, it's not really open to debate. This is the science of economics, and it turns out that if the liberals accuse us of not paying any attention to science, they don't pay any attention to the science of economics. They don't seem to pay attention to supply and demand. They think there's such a thing as a free lunch. And the truth of the matter is this will simply play itself out in the cause and effect of a demise in our economy, and they will see that. So you don't even need to win the argument. You just need to have people wake up to what's actually in front of them and is actually happening. And I think at some point, the one way to look at it is we've lost this debate and things will never be good again. And that's the definition of clinical depression, is things will never be good again. But in truth, what you should look at it is we're part of a 48% minority that's being persecuted.
Mm-hmm.
And what we need is we just need the 52% to realize it's not healthy.
Well, at least 5% of those 52.
There you go.
That'd swing us. David Marotta is our guest. 977-1070 is the phone number. John, hold the line. We will get to you as soon as the Shilling Show returns after the break. Bruce is standing by. You can get in line right now. 977-1070. What will we do? How will we cope with post-election depression syndrome? David Marotta is with us. Stay tuned to the Shilling Show.
They say it'll look like rain.
Talk. 977-1070 is the phone number here on the Shilling Show. Our guest is David Marotta. We're talking about post-election depression syndrome. John has been extremely patient waiting through the break for us. So without further ado, let us say hello to John. John, welcome to the Shilling Show. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Well, I'm doing okay. We're talking about this. Are you suffering from this ailment?
Yeah, the funny thing happened this morning that's pertinent to what you guys are talking about. My wife and I received a delivery from unquestionably the largest furniture retailer in the state of Virginia, and mm-hmm. probably the third largest on the East Coast. And I was talking to the delivery drivers, and he said, well, looks like our expansion's off. And I said, what's the deal? And he said, I'm not going to use the guy's name.
Yeah.
He said the owner has made a decision that since Romney lost, he's not going to take a chance on expanding. He was going to expand his operations significantly along the East Coast.
Mm.
And he's now dialed it back, told his employees we're going to stay right where we are. So I think that, that speaks volumes about what's going to happen, I think, across the business community.
Yeah, David, did you want to respond to that?
Yeah, it's certainly true. I hear the same things from some of the small business owners that we work with, and that is it's too risky in this environment. And although the government likes to take the claim for having helped people build their businesses,
mm-hmm.
the truth is when you go bankrupt alone. And when you run into money troubles or cash flow troubles, you go into those alone. I mean, The reason why I'm not as depressed about it as I was right after the elections is, after all, we are the party of personal responsibility. So for us, the government is not a necessary part of our lives. They are an annoyance, and they certainly can make life more difficult. And in times like these, I certainly understand the small business owners who say, you know what, I'm not going to take that risk. And the truth is that hurts the most vulnerable members of society more than anything that the Republicans would ever have proposed, is the lack of expansion, the lack of growth in the economy, the lack of more GDP that would then get taxed. And what we've done is, by raising that top corporate tax rate, I mean, we have, in essence, for some people, we might as well have raised it to 100% marginal taxation, because it kept them from straying into that area. And that's why a progressive tax rate really destroys a lot of economic activity. And the higher it gets, the more it gets. Why should I, as a business owner, be punished for wanting to start a new business that has nothing to do with my current business, whereas someone else who isn't running a business could start that business and be much, much more profitable at it? It doesn't make any sense. If the business is worth doing, why am I prevented from doing it and someone else is not prevented from doing it, simply because we have this huge progressive tax rate and it pushes me into higher tax brackets?
977-1070, the phone number. John, good to hear from you. Thank you for the call. There's a line open for you right now at 977-1070. Chris is on the line. And Chris, welcome to the Shilling Show. You're on with David Morata.
Hey, Mr. Shilling, you're talking about everyone, well, some people are depressed about the elections. Everyone saw the day's local paper, I think a lot of us should be overjoyed that in today's paper, Mr. Allen is retiring.
Mm-hmm.
And as an independent voter myself, I think one of the biggest problems we have in Washington, D.C. today is the retread politicians, and unfortunately, we had two of those last week running for a Senate seat. And I think we could use some fresh ideas and fresh people up in Washington. And I think it's a good thing for the state and the country that some of these politicians are moving on or getting out of the way.
I think you make a good point. We really didn't have a choice when it came to the Senate, although we did in the Republican primary. There were a whole ton of new faces, but they weren't able to come up and surpass George Allen, who came in with a big head start.
Well, I didn't really like either candidate, but like I said, I think some of these politicians just hang on too long, and their ideas are stale, and they're just not willing to cross party lines to help our country. So I think that's one positive, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's very difficult for a politician to come in and say, here are my promises. I promise not to spend taxpayer money on anything that isn't absolutely essential. And you don't get elected that way, is the problem. You get elected by promising to spend money on things that a subset of the population likes. And not enough of the population actually likes lower taxes and smaller government. And that's the problem. Or at least I should say that over 50% want the government to spend money on lots of stuff. And that works so long as you don't run out of other people's money to spend. And the problem is, as you hear from small business owners, is small business owners are just tired of working 80-hour weeks when half of it goes to the government, and they can work a 40-hour week and keep themselves in lower tax brackets and not have to worry about as much.
Chris, thank you for the call. Nice to hear from you. A new Chris, and there comes another line in on number one. 977-1070 is the phone number here on The Shilling Show. If you have comments, questions, or challenges, and we'd love to hear from you if you disagree, for our guest, David Morata, the number is 977-1070, and we would love to take your call. We're going to a break, and we will continue with this conversation on coping with post-election depression syndrome when The Shilling Show returns. Stay with us. The 977-1070 is the phone number here on The Shilling Show. Our guest is David Morata. He's the president of Morata Wealth Management. You read him weekly in the Sunday opinion section of the daily newspaper, but you can also see his fine writings and lots of great information online at maradaonmoney.com, and I hope that you'll go there and check it out. We were talking a little bit off the air, and one of the things that I heard from people, and one of the causes of the post-election depression syndrome, was that people are concerned for their kids and in some cases for their grandkids, for these young ones who really haven't had a say in this, but they're going to get saddled with some very severe policies and the repercussions of these decisions.
Yeah, it's certainly true that we are spending money on ourselves and putting the bill on people who haven't even been born yet. And I think I wrote a column on how I thought young people, of all the people, ought to be the most conservative because all of the healthcare costs are baby boomers. And there's legislation already in place that says you can't charge anyone more than, I think it's something like three times as much as the least expensive. You can't charge anyone more than three times as much. And what that means is they take whatever the most expensive coverage is for a 90-year-old, and they can't charge young people less than one-third because that's the way it works. And so as a consequence, healthcare for young people costs much, much more than it needs to. They're healthy. They don't need healthcare coverage that much. If they were in a demographic by themselves, it would be very cheap and inexpensive. And as a result, it's very expensive. In fact, most of Obamacare was just to require young people to buy health insurance. They're the ones who are uninsured, and they're uninsured because they don't want to pay three or four times more than they actually have to in order to get it. And the same thing's true about the debt. We're spending all this stuff to close donut holes and give more goodies to those of us who are aging baby boomers, and it's all coming at the expense of running up the deficit that our children and grandchildren will have to pay for. I think I made a comment that we truly are the most selfish generation that has ever existed. Our parents and grandparents won World War II for us, and our children are footing the bill for our health care, and we just continue to be the me generation. So I think that's the moral case we need to continue to make. And just because we happen to lose one election doesn't mean we've lost the greater battle. It would be sort of like Hitler saying to Churchill, look, I took France, so you might as well concede Britain as well.
Right. Give me the keys.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, we just need to be like Churchill. We need to have the grit to stand firm on what we believe and say never, never, never. That is not what we're going to do. That's not what we believe in. These are our core values. You can't change us from that. And we think that the next generation deserves to have the freedom to stand or fall on their own and not be saddled with our debt.
This is the hard part, though, because there are a lot of people who are rolling over. Bill Kristol took a lot of heat for some comments that he made. You know, oh, what the heck of Republicans? Why are they going to die on that hill of you know, keeping taxes down for millionaires and billionaires who maybe they're mostly Democrats anyway? Then there was Sean Hannity talking about some sort of a path to citizenship, and Charles Krauthammer. So a lot of people that have been respected in conservative thought over the years do seem to be capitulating, and that is really inflaming the people who want to stand strong, because if those people don't stand up for the principles, what's left?
Well, and it's certainly true, and this is the odd balance I think that every politician needs to face. Americans do what Americans do best, and that is compromise politically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good thing. If we don't have that, we'll fight another civil war, and there, you know, it really will be worse. And the question is, how can you maintain your core values and still compromise? I thought the offer of $10 of spending cuts for $1 of additional taxes, that was not a bad proposal if what they meant was $10 of true cuts and not $10 of less increases, which is unfortunately what they normally mean. So I think there are compromises like that, and I think I'd be probably – I mean, as it is, we're going to get lots and lots of dollars of tax cuts at the end of the, or of tax increases at the end of this year for absolutely no spending cuts, other than a physical cliff that as we drive off probably isn't the best way to have spending cuts. And it's not even spending cuts; it's just reimbursement cuts to doctors who will then drop Medicare. So even the way that they engineered the cuts probably wasn't all that great to begin with, and we created this crisis that we're now about to drive off ourselves politically through political compromise. So I'm all for compromise and trying to find some middle ground where everyone is slightly unhappy, but still maintaining what our core values are. And those are the difficult compromises that Lincoln had to face in the Civil War of trying to negotiate all the different factions, and that we're trying to face and not have all the secessionists actually, you know, pick up arms and fight the Civil War again.
David, we talk about the moral case for free enterprise, and yet I don't believe that's being taught. If it's in any government school in the country, I'd be very surprised. I think it's probably being taught by homeschool parents and maybe in some private schools, some Christian schools. But we're being taught, many of the kids today, that free enterprise and free markets are evil because they're selfish and greedy, and they produce these horrible millionaires and billionaires. I mean, that's the message the kids are getting. How do we fight that?
Yeah, and that's the thing that after you've sort of dusted yourself off and gotten your head around yourself, that things haven't changed all that much from what they were 2 weeks ago. Then you can start to ask the question, what's one small thing that I can do over the next 4 years to make sure that the next election people are better informed? And I was glad to see Ron Paul retiring from Congress, and his current job is to go lecture on university campuses.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a small piece that you can do. If you have influence within a certain community, maybe you're a conservative in the Hispanic community, you know, there's some outreach that needs to be done there. But I would say that the moral case to free enterprise is one that is probably the most important piece, and it needs to be hammered over and over again. And I think the three parts are that free enterprise safeguards lasting freedom.
Mm-hmm.
It promotes real fairness, and it does the most good to the most vulnerable. And I think even our discussion today shows that last one, that it does the most good to the most vulnerable, because as you have this increasingly progressive tax burden, it's doing the most harm to the most vulnerable. And there's really nothing that government can do about that short of forcing productive people to be even more productive and earn even more money.
What's interesting about what you say as we think about it is that in America we have the poor who are oftentimes very well fed and have lots of amenities and things that far surpass the poor in the rest of the world. And it is due to at least our history of free enterprise. We could never have had all these things. And we can look at any other country in the world that's poor, and the poor are dirt poor. It's not the case in America.
It's true. The dirt poor in any other country would gladly come here, and they would get a job well below minimum wage, and mm-hmm. they'd live like kings compared to the country that they're coming from. You're right. We have an incredible largesse, and we have incredibly generous hearts as Americans. And even our charitable giving could support the poor much better than anything else. The biggest problem with entitlements is that it does not produce lasting happiness in those who are given entitlements, because what produces lasting happiness is actually getting something that you have earned and worked for, that confidence of having a job and knowing you've been a productive member of society. The absolute best charity that you could possibly hope for is a small business owner giving you a job and making you productive, such that you actually produce more than you consume, and you have a largesse then to give to others.
I guess the sad thing is that so many in America today have never or rarely experienced the satisfaction of a job well done. I mean, you can go out in the backyard and plant a garden, and at the end of the day, you can look and say, wow, I did that. I dug that dirt up. I put the seeds in. I watered it. I did that. It's a great – it may be a small thing to some people, but – it's a great way to end up a day anytime that you do some sort of labor or work, and you can look back and say, hey, I was productive today. If you don't know that feeling, you wouldn't know to seek it.
And that's what we've lost a little bit among the generation that's coming up. The generation that's coming up thinks they can do whatever they want and doesn't necessarily have as much of a sense of personal responsibility, say, as our parents and grandparents. And I fault us for that, because we, as a baby boomer generation, have modeled a lack of personal responsibility as much as we possibly could in our moral lives, in our integrity, in our public lives, and elsewhere. And I think that's part of the problem, is that it's very difficult to be the party of personal responsibility, because you actually don't have goodies to offer people. You mm-hmm. just say, look, you need to have more grit. You need to have more determination. And the response to that is always, oh, we've got lots of that, and we're still not making it because the whole system is unfair. But look around; the system is not unfair. There's such opportunity in America that anyone can work hard. That's the prerequisite: work hard,
mm-hmm.
and then gain more. And you can work hard even if you're just working two jobs. You can work hard and get ahead and get capital. And so long as you live below your means, which again is personal responsibility. And these are the things that actually make the biggest difference in your financial life. It's people who work very hard and have very low consumption that build real wealth.
And these are good lessons for people to learn, even if it's late in life. David Morata, always a good time here. Thanks so much for helping us cope with the post-election depression syndrome. And we'll look forward to the next conversation.
Thank you very much.
And he's online at moradaonmoney.com. That's going to wrap up this hour of The Shilling Show.